passing along a darkened corridor that suddenly blanched when lights flicker on. Douglas Booth. Matthew Horn. A young man starts to apply makeup as a TV studio powers up. Mark Gatiss. The man blends bright pink and yellow eyeshadow under high black theatrical eyebrows that are drawn on. Freddie Fox, Richard Madden and Mark Warren. A drum kit and microphone under brightening lights. Then a studio camera centered on the 80s logo for the Top of the Pops music chart show. Finishing off with intense scarlet lipstick, the man assesses his transformation. A pale foundation in stark contrast to black eyeliner and eyebrows. Now Roy Hay, a man in baggy white clothing, enters a dressing room where a dark-haired man in his underwear is spraying copious amounts of underarm deodorant.
John! John! You won't come out of the car!
He looks at Roy. It's dark as John Moss leads Roy and Mikey Craig towards a parked car with tinted windows. Their clothing is a garish clash of white with colourful patterns and writing.
She's definitely in there. George, don't be a prat, not today.
How are we going to get him out?
What are you looking at me for?
I think he might be upset about something.
After an awkward grimace, John gives his band colleagues a glance and they head off, leaving him alone.
George, will you just open the door so that we can talk about this? Please. Pretty please. Open the bloody door!
Biggest day of our lives and you're going to ruin it. Well, thank you very much.
George, the heavily made-up man, is in the back seat, wearing sunglasses from under which a tear falls. Worried about the boy.
O'Dowd!
An androgynous-looking teenager with thin, plucked eyebrows and shoulder-length dark black hair sighs, picks up a tartan bag and leaves two nervous-looking students in a corridor, Eltham Green Secondary School.
So, George, what do you want to be?
Dunno.
What, no burning ambitions? Fighter pilot? Hairdresser? Captain of the England team? Valerie Singleton soap on a rope? I've had them all in here today. Unemployment's on the rise. You need a skill. What can you do better than others?
Makeup.
It's not really a career choice, though, is it?
Well, at the end of play for today, it says makeup by...
Listen, sunshine. The future might seem a long way off right now. But you take one wrong step, and who knows where you'll end up.
A police officer peers through a spy hole into a cell where George is sitting. On the other side... The hole has been made to represent the genitalia of a woman with her legs spread apart. George sits up as a stubbly, haggard man is shown in.
A dress. You could nick anything you want, but you'll choose a dress.
You know, son, I was 18 once. I had brothel creepers, drapes, the biggest quiff in the neighbourhood, you know. I get it. But this thing you're going through right now, it won't last forever. Fashions come and go.
No, fashion is what you adopt when you don't know who you are. Quentin Crisp said that.
Oh, the puff and the hat. I don't pretend to know much. But I do know this. You are never going to achieve anything in this life looking like that.
Yeah, who says I want to achieve anything? I mean, why is everyone so obsessed with how I'm going to turn out?
Because we're worried about you. We want the best for you.
Yeah, well... Whatever's going to happen to me, I don't think it's going to happen here.
George snatches the coat from his father, Jerry, and stands by the door, waiting to be released. A young George leaves his parents' suburban home.
Marcel, mind yourself up.
Heavily made up, he carries a suitcase and a naked female mannequin. His much more conservatively dressed parents wave him off from the doorstep. Jerry then moves inside, but Dinah lingers with a forlorn expression. Her hair's in curlers and a net.
Air,
With a determined gait, George strides along the centre of his neighbourhood street. Then images over roofs and treetops before George is making his way through a dingy city street, past construction hoarding covered with bill posters. One such poster advertises Susie and the Banshees. Squat, 1980, London. George arrives outside a dilapidated five-story Georgian house at night. Inside, he makes his way up a grimy staircase in dim half-light. Somewhere above him, music blares. On a landing, he passes several rooms, some filled with clutter, then encounters a young couple.
Sit down.
She was doing a handstand while he was trying to zip up her tight pink trousers. In the morning, George stirs under a blanket on a dirty mattress. Now he's brushing his teeth and picking his way across a landing littered with pots of water.
Nice pants.
George spits into a glass and goes back to a doorway where a transvestite wearing a blonde wig is smoking.
Am I dreaming?
Why don't you pinch yourself?
George does.
Ouch.
All right, George?
Is this yours?
Isn't she brilliant?
She?
It's Marilyn Monroe.
What's that make me? Betty Davis. What's his real name?
Norma Jean.
She gives him a saucy wink. George rolls his eyes and goes. Marilyn catches up with him in his room as he's getting dressed.
What are you wearing? These would go for 200 quid in sex. Found a suit in a bin behind the wedding hire shop and cut up an old kilt with the straps.
Yeah, I'm sure that would be very outrageous back home in Trumpton.
Elton.
What are you?
Exactly.
You're not a punk. Too much makeup, even for a mod. And I think we can rule out skinhead or hippie. Glam, perhaps.
Well, I'm nothing.
Which
is why I can look good in anything.
Anything?
Framing herself in a hole in the wall beside a poster of the actual Marilyn Monroe. Now dressed in their most extravagant garb, Dawn, Sarah, Moe, Christopher, Marilyn and George parade along a street, dominating the pavement on a night out.
Though nothing will drive them away.
George's hair is up in a tall quiff at the front, but brushed down straight at the back. He sucks on a cigarette. They round a bend onto a bustling back street and barge their way through a crowd. The velvet rope at the front of a club queue is unlatched for Steve Strange, a heavily made-up man with a silver-tipped cane, black cape and feathered cap. He surveys the hopefuls.
And what have we stumbled upon here? A boy, is it? A boy in mascara.
A wall mirror is brought out.
Take a good look. Would you let this in? Go home, make an effort.
Marilyn leads the gang cue jumping.
And here they line up, the wacky racers. Penelope Pitstop, Peter Perfect, the gruesome twosome, the anthill mob. And I guess that makes you Dick Dastardly. Or Muttley, perhaps.
I heard there was a shortage of pricks in London tonight.
So good of you to get coaching from the valleys and make up the shortfall.
We are very busy tonight.
Well, that's because they've all come to look at me, you Welsh fuck.
He pushes past Steve's cane and enters, leaving him brooding. Now George heads down dimly lit stairs into the bowels of the Warreners Club. Strutting through dingy corridors in his shoulder-padded jacket, he draws looks from other young misfits and hands his small handbag in to a cloakroom attendant, to whom he gives a lingering look before moving on. Further along the corridor, he encounters a couple in silhouette kissing in a darkened side room, while a white-haired man, Martin Deadville, smokes against a wall just outside. Onward to a crowded room where a photographer takes a snap of the up-and-coming group Spandau Ballet. They adopt album poses against a poster with an arrow and the slogan, Arm Him. Rusty Egan, the club's DJ, makes a friendly masturbation gesture at George, who notices Marilyn getting a light from a young man at a table. The rest of the gang are on the dance floor, which is bathed in pale red light. George circles it, moving to the beat, and twirling Marilyn when she joins him. As he struts around, a scruffy short man with spiky blonde hair barges into him. It's Billy Idol. Billy moves on, chewing a cigarette, and George is joined near a pillar by Christopher. They survey the room.
Smell the fucking mothballs from here.
Am I the only one making an effort? I mean, it's worse than last week.
They both perk up upon noticing Kirk Brandon. He's a buff, dark-haired man in a short-sleeved shirt who's dancing with an attractive woman with long blonde hair. With
concentration. TBX. My size increased. To be had.
With a wry smile, George watches Kirk getting pawed by his date. She starts to kiss him, and George's expression sours. Until he gets a glance from Kirk as he's being led away by the woman. George makes his way to the club's male toilets, which are bustling and misty with hairspray.
Excuse me, sorry. Sorry, excuse me, just want to get to the bog. Thank you.
Impatient, he heads to the ladies and finds Mo in a cubicle, inhaling fumes rising from a substance in tinfoil she's heating with a lighter.
Last train to Clarksville.
No thanks, darling. Give my love to Vicious and Joplin when you see him.
He uses the neighbouring cubicle to urinate. Later, as he's staggering out of the Blitz nightclub, he's startled by a young photographer.
Sorry, I was just wanting to...
What are you apologising for? Keep going.
This time, George poses for the photographer, who snaps away eagerly. Soon, Marilyn and the rest of the gang join in the impromptu photo shoot. Professional black-and-white images of George. Hampstead, 1986. A short-haired George is sprawled on a bed.
Further allegations regarding the pop star boy George have emerged today, following revelations in a Sunday newspaper by his younger brother David.
A newspaper headline starts, Junkie George. Now he's rifling through drawers in his lavish but untidy bedroom. Boxed boy George dolls are perched on a bedside table. He finds some keys and leaves in a hurry, but is accosted by the press outside.
Fine and fucking dandy, how are you?
You gonna buy some drugs, George?
Not unless I start selling Skag in Tesco's.
How are you feeling today?
The same as I was 3 seconds ago when you asked
me
that.
Why do you think your brother grassed you up?
Well, maybe he's a compulsive liar.
Are you taking drugs, George?
No. Why, are you?
We're offering £50,000 to anyone who can prove you're on heroin.
Well, for that sort of money, might just take it out.
Well, is that a confession?
The pasty-faced George marches back to his doorstep, holding his hand up to obscure a camera.
I'm not a drug addict. I'm a drag addict. And if you're going to quote me on anything, for God's sake, make sure it's that. Now, can't he fuck off? Go pick on Wham for a change.
We're worried about you, George.
He hesitates before turning back to them.
You really want to help me? I need milk. Tea, sugar, Weetabix. Oh, and some Coke. Yeah, the fizzy brown variety.
Message for the fans, George!
He gives them the V sign, his eyes hidden behind dark round sunglasses. In 1980, on his way back from Blitz one night, dressed as a nun, George passes a gang of skinheads.
Oh, darling!
Come here, Di, I'm talking to you! Come on!
Come on, it's good.
Yeah, you want some? Come on!
Come here, darling.
Come
I
want to
see
her. Hey, leave her alone. Go on, sod off.
What's the problem? Something to do with you, is it?
The gang back away along the alley.
Drinks!
You must be my knight in camouflaged armour.
Vernon, a shaven-headed and moustachioed man in an army vest, looks George over. Now they're having steamy sex in a phone booth. Standing behind George, Vernon stops thrusting and whispers into his ear.
I'm already gay.
Oh, it's okay, I'm not really a nun.
Scrunching up pages in a directory. At the squat, George tells Marilyn...
Let's just say I memorised every name and number from A to D.
You're a fucking fantasist.
What's this then?
Could have done that yourself.
You're accusing me of sucking my own neck.
No, I'm saying you could have pinched it there yourself to make it look like a love bite.
No, that's not even possible.
Yeah, it is. Watch.
Marilyn pinches her neck.
What are you homos doing?
Scientific experiment to prove that George is a lying little puff.
Yeah, well, you'll meet me at the party and then you'll see.
What party?
He shoots them a naughty smile and leaves their makeshift kitchen. Now the squat is packed with revelers. Marilyn and Christopher are dolled up having a ball on the stairs. George dances his way up the staircase crowded with people. Then, while Dawn swigs from a spirit bottle, he surveys the scene from the landing before moving on with growing frustration. He finds Mo slumped against a fireplace, smoking. To Dawn.
All right. Has anyone seen Vernon?
I need to fuck someone.
Okay.
He shrugs her off and goes next door where some guys are watching TV.
Vernon?
Come on here, mate.
He then bumps into Marilyn.
Darling, you seen Vernon? No.
George hears giggles behind a closed door, and upon entering, discovers the naked bottom of a man thrusting on top of Sarah.
Oh, sorry, is anyone see?
Shut the door, George. There's a breeze out and not be chuff.
Vernon goes after George.
George. George, come here. George!
I'm sorry, is it my turn already? Well, how do you want me up? The stairs are in the crapper.
I'm trying to tell you, mate.
Yeah, tell me what?
Well, you know.
No, I don't know. Tell me what? Well, do your mama's pearls that you secretly listen to Billy Joel records?
I'm straight.
Well, you might have mumbled something while I was in your mouth. Was that what you were trying to say? Listen up, everybody, in case any of you have any doubts. Vernon here is straight. 100% hetero.
Oh, shut up.
Oh.
Vernon shoves him.
You shouldn't have done that.
George punches him, then gets him in a headlock and the pair grapple. Vernon wriggles free and punches George to the floor. He then kicks him in the stomach, but George gets to his feet, dodges a haymaker, and lays Vernon out with one punch before crouching over him.
The ass kicked by a fairy.
He pats Vernon's chest, scuffs his shoe and his vest, and accepts the adulation of others as he heads upstairs. Everyone except for Sarah, he flicks her the finger. Humiliated, Vernon leaves, while George bows to everyone from the landing above. The next day, Marilyn yawns whilst nurturing a mug. A sulky George is staring at his reflection. He sets down a wine bottle and sighs.
I mean, why can I only ever pull straight, guys? Because gay men don't find you attractive. Yeah, they fucking do. Gay men think you're too much. You, Pestle, are what a straight man thinks a gay man looks like. Why are you in my room? Games cheer you up.
Marilyn moves from the edge of the dressing table and puts his arm around George.
Hmm.
Now the pair of them are racing up the squat's central staircase. George is wearing a white Grecian-style toga, and they collapse on his bed in fits of breathless laughter. But then George stops.
Dad.
I'll just go and boil a kettle or something.
Okay, nice. You're wet.
It's raining beer in the Black Lion. What are you doing here?
I'm working nearby. I promised your mammy I'd drop in, see how you're getting on. Called into your office yesterday.
Yeah, they invented a machine to replace me. You should get one.
Now just drop the wisecracks for 1 minute, will you? I'm not one of your friends.
Yeah, I'll find someone else.
Yeah, when?
I don't know.
Doing what?
I don't know, Christ, you just lay off me. I'm not hurting anyone.
Right, that's it. Come on. Get your stuff together.
What?
Taking you home. You gave it your best shot and it just didn't work out. There's no shame in that. No, come on.
No, this is my home. These are my friends. I'm not going anywhere.
I just want you to have a plan.
Daytime. When George returns to the squat with bags of food shopping, he finds Marilyn and a man leaving.
George? John? John? George?
All we need now is a pool and Ringo.
So? What do you think of the penis extension?
Lovely. I'm circumcised too.
You know, your nose grows when you get jealous. You're like Pinocchio, with bad skin.
You ready, Peter?
Marilyn's smile fades and he turns to George.
Yeah, he's still a work in progress. Send your postcard.
Wait, from where?
Scotland. I think he owns a chunk of it.
Well, what am I going to do now?
If you ever get lonely, you could always resort to a series of grubby one-night stands.
George looks forlorn.
Honey, you'll be fine. I'll be back to visit very soon. Promise. That's it. Keep your chins up. Oh, and, I left a little something on your bed. Enjoy.
John speeds away in his orange convertible. George stands watching them with a morose expression. In his bedroom, he finds a copy of Q Music magazine open on his mattress. Inside, he discovers the photograph of him and the rest of the gang taken outside the Blitz. Now he's showing it to his dad. Over the page is another shot of George with Steve. Jerry removes his cigarette for a moment.
What am I supposed to be looking at here, son?
It's me.
Jerry frowns.
So what have yous all done?
Nothing.
I don't get it, Summit.
We're a fashion movement.
Right. So what are yous called?
We don't have a name.
Well, I probably wouldn't have heard of you then, would I? Hey? Hey, Dee! Dee, listen to this, yeah? He said he's in a fashion movement, yeah? So I said, well, what are yous called? And he said, oh, we don't have a name. I said, well, I probably wouldn't have heard of you then, would I?
That's funny.
Oh, I don't know. Any news on the job front?
Yes and no.
Which?
Well, I've heard about a job that's going.
So, can you get an interview?
Yeah, that isn't the problem.
It's cloakroom attendant at the Blitz.
So, why do you want this job, Mr. O'Dowd?
I fucking don't.
In that case, you're hired.
Loosening a light bulb.
You're so hideous. I don't want the public looking at you.
Steve struts around the cloakroom.
Chop, chop.
Black and white stills of people in increasingly flamboyant and bizarre states of dress, waiting and chatting in the street outside the venue. Sporting an enormous quiff and fringed cowboy shirt, Steve Strange comes out and assesses the potential. then selects a young man by pointing at him with his cane. Steve leads him into the club with his hand on the young man's backside. Caroline, Kirk's blonde girlfriend from earlier, enters the club and hands her coat to George in the cloakroom.
Shall I check it?
Welcome, mate.
Just give me my ticket.
He does so with a forced smile. She snatches it and hands him a coin as payment. Once she's gone, he throws her coat on the floor. Then Kirk appears, places a motorcycle helmet on the counter, and proceeds to remove his leather jacket. George watches in awe. Kirk smiles as he walks around into the club. George appears in the cloakroom's other service hatches, watching in adoration as Kirk passes, whilst coolly lighting a cigarette. Later, he's watching Kirk whilst sucking a straw in a bottle at the bar. Kirk's dancing closely with Caroline. Passing the couple, Steve eyes the hunk before making his way over to George.
Fuck off, Steve. I'm on a break.
His name's Kirk. He's a singer.
What does he sing about?
Diving into muff, for all I know. Straight. Very straight.
That's your problem, Steve. No ambition.
Back to your hutch.
Steve swaggers off and eyes Kirk's bum as he passes. Now George is behind the cloakroom counter, rifling through coat pockets. He pulls out a lipstick, checks the colour on the back of his hand, but then discards it. He finds a purse, removes any cash inside, and is about to replace it when Kirk appears. George looks up, terrified, until Kirk holds up two bottles of beer. A drink later...
This country hasn't been engaged in a proper land war for 35 years. Don't you think we're due one? What are you, 20 years old? Any war in the 1980s, and there will be one, you and me will be conscripted.
It'd be cool if they put us all together, you know, we could be like a cross-dressing regiment.
Just suppose they do make us fight. Who do you think it's going to be against?
I don't know. The Russian.
Well, what's a Russian ever done to hurt you?
Well, they have nuclear.
So do the Americans. What makes you trust an American over a Russian?
Anyway, Maggie will save us.
Thatcher.
It's just Callahan in a dress.
You should put that in a song.
Kirk mulls on this.
Our fathers will be remembered as the generation who skipped the wars. That's why they fucking hate us. That's what punk was really all about. That's why it ended the way it did. As soon as they started labelling it, we killed it off. And whatever we come up with next, we'll kill that before they figure it out.
My dad thinks wearing aftershave makes a man gay.
Who are you talking to?
A desperate Kirk's hiding behind the counter from Caroline.
Myself, obviously.
He takes her ticket.
What does it look like?
Kirk mouths, this one.
Oh, now I remember, sort of grey, looked like something we buried my nan in. Voila. Where's the boyfriend tonight?
He's gone home.
Alone.
What's it to you?
You want to keep your eye on that one. I reckon he's got a tendency to deceive.
Kirk punches his leg.
You're mental.
Kirk and George walk along a rain-washed pavement.
It's very sweet of you to walk me home.
I'm a gentleman.
You sure your bike's going to be right back there?
What bike?
Oh, your motorbike.
Why would you think I have a motorbike?
Oh, I don't know, the helmet and the jacket.
My mate gave me a back, he dropped me off at the club. Why, do you like bikers or something?
Well, the ones who don't chase me or threaten to kick my teeth in. This is me.
Do you want to come and see us play sometime?
Well, only if you write a song about me. How are you getting home?
I don't know. The bus.
They stopped running hours ago.
I mean, you can come in for a cuppa if you like.
You know I don't have sex with blokes, right?
I'm only offering tea.
With a playful smirk, George skips up the steps to the squat's front door and gestures for Kirk to enter. Hesitantly, he does. On a scummy kitchen table bearing fag butts, George attempts to make them both a brew, but having filled two mugs with boiling water, he discovers they're out of tea bags, so he fishes a used one out of an overflowing bin and brings them to Kirk in his candlelit bedroom.
Hope you like it, Week.
You look like a girl.
Thank you.
Kirk takes a tea, almost embarrassed. They perch on George's mattress. It's getting kind of late now. Well, I wonder if you'll stay now, stay now, stay now, stay now. I'll bring you just... Having taken a sip, Kirk puts his drink aside and George does the same. The pair sit in silence. Unable to make eye contact, Kirk shifts his hand across the mattress so that it brushes against George's. George then gently links his little finger around Kirk's. Slowly, their heads tilt towards one another, stopping a few inches apart. George then takes the initiative and lies down on his side behind Kirk. Kirk stares down at the floor, wrestling with his feelings, as George's hand touches the back of his neck, black painted fingernails catching the candlelight. Tensing his chiseled jaw, Kirk lies down and holds George's hand in his and against his chest. They lie there in a warm but silent hug, and after a long moment, Kirk closes his eyes. George tries to, but allows himself one last look at Kirk before nuzzling the back of his head and settling down to sleep. In 1986, an ashen George lies sleeping and has short, tousled hair. A blurred image of flames, then a figure passing behind George. Clothes are being burned. The figure's shadow passes in front of George, staring him from his slumber. The world takes a moment to come into focus enough for George to stand. He shuffles over to the window of his lavish apartment and is shocked to discover Jerry in the back garden, burning clothes in a metal bin. He races out to stop him.
What the hell are you doing, you crazy old bastard?
Oh, I'm killing him, that's what.
Killing who?
That freak they all like to go up at. The junkie that's taken over my son's body.
Well, it's a good thing insanity doesn't run in the family.
He dashes inside, nursing a crumpled garment.
I received a Grammy in this.
Ah, get a hold of yourself. It's only a dress.
Wrong. It's an Issy Miyake. He's such a thick Irish lump. He probably don't even know who he is. How'd you get in here?
Through the window. One of the photographers gave me a leg up.
Oh, nice to know they're good for something.
Yeah, they're worried about you.
I don't know if you've noticed, but I've got a big fucking bounty on my head, and I'm not talking the chocolate variety. I mean, your fellow housebreakers out there are paid to harass me.
Well, one minute you're chasing after them, and then the next minute they're chasing after you. I don't know. It seems like a funny old game, if you ask me. And you're wasting your time anyway, because I flushed it all, what I could find of it anyway. I'm sure you have another stash hidden away somewhere.
You've been watching too much, Granger.
Jerry paces about with his hands in his pockets. He sits on the bed and cuts a world-weary figure, his eyes wrinkled and his beard greying. Glancing at his son, he shakes his head and wonders.
Is this my fault, Aldous? Did I fuck up with you somehow?
You say that like there's something wrong with me.
Oh, you don't even see it, do you? You know, if you are happy,
Go, please, Dad. Just go.
I came here to help.
What do you think you're capable of doing? I mean, so far, all you've done is aggravate my asthma.
Why don't you let me just try?
Because I'm fine. I mean, stop reading the fucking red tops for a day and look at me. I'm your son. Look at me. I am fine.
He stops hitting his head and sinks it onto his sorrowful father's shoulder. Jerry goes to comfort him, but hesitates.
I don't even recognise you. I should have brought the letters. People who've had the same problems with their sons and daughters.
Oh, so reassuring to know I'm a cliche.
They're worried about you, Georgie. People grab me and your mammy in the shops and they tell us they want to see you get better. Come here, we had a phone call from Japan a few days back. I didn't understand what he was saying most of the time, but it was obvious it was about you. Hey, how boy, hey. People you've never even met are praying for you. You see, when I get sick, you know, your mummy just sneers at me, but you have no idea how many people love you.
Tormented, George grabs the front page. Junkie George has 8 weeks to live.
Then why do I feel so hated?
Back in 1980, bathed in early morning light, he hugs the sleeping Kirk tighter and settles back down to sleep. Later, George is tripping happily down the squat stairs. He looks towards the front door, but then decides against going out and idles the day away by reading magazines and playing with his jet black hair. Morning gives way to afternoon, and by evening, George is slumped in a chair by the front door, smoking a cigarette. He's perching on the stairs when Kirk's silhouette appears at the front door's patterned glass window. After a moment's consideration, Kirk enters with resolve. George quickly stands when he sees Kirk, who hesitates at the bottom of the stairs. Then, with determination, Kirk marches up towards him.
You're a girl. If that's what you want,
just say it.
I'm a girl.
Again.
I'm a girl. I'm your girl.
They kiss hungrily, George running his fingers through Kirk's short, silky brown hair. Then they stop and take a moment to gaze into each other's eyes before sharing a playful smile and hurrying upstairs. Now the pair are dancing happily in the Blitz Club with Christopher and the others, George striking flamboyant poses as he moves about centre stage. He whispers something in Kirk's ear and the pair laugh. In the squat's bathroom, a table is laden with empty beer bottles. Kirk swigs the last. His head is under a towel and George finishes drying it. Then he turns Kirk towards the mirror to reveal his now bleached blonde locks.
Bloody hell. Yeah, I love it.
They kiss. Now walking along a street all dolled up, Kirk takes George's hand in his. They round a street corner chatting away, engrossed in each other. One evening at the squat, Mo brings a cake lit with a circle of birthday candles to the kitchen table. Dawn takes her hands away from George's eyes and he beams at Kirk before blowing the candles out. His friends applaud. Then Kirk hands him a present wrapped in gold paper with a red bow. Inside is a black and white patterned jacket. He holds up the garment, which has baggy sleeves and Chinese symbols on the back. Overwhelmed, he gives Kirk a loving kiss, and they hug while Christopher admires the fashionable top. Later, in Georgie's candlelit bedroom, Kirk takes a drag on a cigarette with a guitar on his lap. George sits forward with some notepaper in his hands as Kirk prepares to play.
Since you came in my life, I've had to rearrange my whole mentality and my sexuality.
What are you doing?
I think they call it singing.
But that's your singing voice.
Why, what's wrong with it?
Nothing, just... don't suit the song.
Well, maybe I'll write a song that does suit my voice.
You? Write music.
George is hurt, and at another time is hunched over the kitchen table, scrawling lyrics and screwing them up. Daylight, hazy with cigarette smoke, casts him in silhouette as he labours. Having scribbled another few sentences, he looks up in thought. Theatre of Hate, the Marquee, 1980. A small staging area bears musicians warming up under pink and yellow lighting. George is at the bar, securing a scarf to Kirk's wrist as he swigs a beer.
Wait.
Fixing Kirk's stray hair.
Quite a bit of cheers.
All right, John.
Kirk, shouldn't you be up there?
They can have him when I'm done. All right. Go break someone else's leg.
I was finishing my drink.
What are you? A fan?
I'm a drummer.
Ooh, checking out the competition, are we?
Something like that. John Moss.
A handshake, how very traditional. George O'Dowd, so very pleased to make your acquaintance.
O'Dowd, Irish.
Irish to the heels of my blokes. Can I need a little jig for you, sir?
So what do you do, George, apart from take the piss?
I take care of Kirk's appearance.
Thought his mum was still dressing him.
Well, he's moving out of home soon. You know, we'll probably get a place together. Something nice in the suburbs. Growing veg, skin around goats, all very Tom and Barbara.
Kirk, he's as straight as I am.
Well, I'd say the jury's still out on the pair of you.
With a smirk, George turns towards the stage and John comes to stand beside him as Kirk's band begins to play. Blue floor lights flash intermittently as Kirk lifts the microphone. John sips his pint and glances at George, who only has eyes for Kirk. In 1986, George hangs up his house phone and moves downstairs. He lingers in the hall for a moment before hurrying back up to the phone again. Over and over again, he tries a number, then hangs up and paces to the hall to burn off anxious energy. He taps in the number one more time.
John? You there?
What do you want?
Who are you doing?
It's the middle of the night and I'm not in the fucking mood for this.
Yeah, well, maybe I'm in the mood to make the fucking effort to get into the mood.
Get to the point, George.
I'm quitting the band.
Didn't we fire you already?
Nobody fires me, dwarf, I am the band. And now I'm a solo artist. Branson would cut his own dick off to get my signature.
Yeah, well, good luck with that.
Let me know how it goes, won't you?
George lowers his eyes, and John, standing in his dressing gown, softens.
Go to bed, George.
Who are you with?
What does it matter?
Just answer the fucking question.
I'm not with anyone. I'm on my own, trying to sleep.
Liar.
What do you want to hear? What do I have to say so that we can both get some sleep? Just tell me and I'll say it.
What do I want to hear?
What do you want to hear?
I want to hear. I want to hear you say.
George lets the phone drop slowly to his shoulder for a moment as he becomes lost in thought. John, waiting on the other end, grows irritable.
Repeat after me. I'm a talentless dwarf Jew and I've made a pile of money riding on your coattails.
Don't fuck yourself, George.
He throws the phone out of a window. In 1980, Steve Strange poses for a photographer outside Blitz, then makes his way along the queue.
Eeny, meeny, miny, moe, catch a poser by the toe. If he hollers, let him go. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Go. Before I change my mind. You'd better be fucking important to be parking on my yellow line.
Steve opens the door and his face falls in shock. The well-dressed passenger puts a leg out and Strange goes down on one knee. He kisses the man's hand while the other clubbers react wildly. Inside, Christopher runs up to George in the cloakroom.
Looking for dancers! Fabinho!
Hey!
George leaps over the counter, pushes his way past some people, and runs through the club to try and get a glimpse of him along with everyone else. While Bowie takes a drink, Steve passes George in a state of shock.
Is it really him?
You can copy the look. You can mimic the voice, but you can't fake the crooked teeth. You're too late.
I am the chosen one.
You?
I'll let you in on a secret, then. David's asked me to pick two other dancers. People I think will compliment the look of his new video. So, if you'll excuse me, that's what I'm going to do. Better luck next time.
George is gutted. In the pub.
First he steals my look, then he steals my career. I mean, I was into Bowie before Steve Strange cultivated his first pubes. Fair. Why are you even listening to me?
Should my face be on this?
Oh, a bit of colour wouldn't go amiss. Bollocks to it. Bowie's loss is your gain. You're going to sell millions and then I can finally tell my parents what I'm going to do with the rest of my life.
And what's that?
Help you spend all your money, of course. That is still the plan, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
Kirk takes an uncomfortable swig of his beer, and George watches him out of the corner of his eye. At the squat, George, wearing an apron, lays a small dinner table for two, carefully positioning the plates and wine glasses opposite each other. He puts some onion rings on the side, a bottle of wine on the table, and a red rose in an empty beer bottle. George lights the candle and drinks a glass of wine while he waits. He sits on his own, getting drunker and more surly, until he knocks the bottle with the rose in it over. It's dark when he shakily makes a call from a phone box.
Hello? Can I speak with Kirk, please?
George listens fearfully.
Don't do this to me. Not on the phone. You say it to my face. Say it to my fucking face, you coward!
He strides quickly through an empty, low-lit estate. The mascara has run around his eyes, and there's a sense of anger and hurt in him as he crosses a small front lawn and knocks on one of the doors in his off-the-shoulder top. A woman looks out from upstairs, but it's Kirk who opens the door.
What are you doing here, you silly tosser?
Have you got something to say to me?
Who is it?
It's for me, Mum! You came all this way to make a scene.
I'd walk further than this.
Get in here.
Kirk and his mum are in the kitchen. George is in the living room.
He's a funny-looking thing.
He's had a fight with his girlfriend. What?
Boys like that do not have girlfriends.
What do you want me to do? Kick him out in the street?
Oh, bless. His little heart's broken.
They both watch him.
He'll get over it.
His mum looks at Kirk as he makes the tea. Then he takes it into George.
Kirk, can... Shh.
They wait while she goes back upstairs to bed.
I made fucking onion rings for you. I mean, you have no idea how much I've cried.
I was hoping you would just take the hint.
Yeah, but we had plans.
Everyone makes plans. It doesn't mean anything.
Look at me. I'm your girl.
But you ain't.
I'm Jane Fonda, I'm Joan Collins, I'm show lad, and whatever you think I am.
Just fucking around, you know, experimenting. None of it's real. But it's like how it got with Punk.
Look, you just shut up about Punk. Punk, you've gone. Just forget about Punk.
That's what I'm saying. Punk's gone. Don't know what's next.
George looks up at him, and they watch each other until Kirk turns away suddenly.
It's all changing, haven't you noticed? Everyone looks more like you and less like me.
Yeah, but I'd give anything to look like you.
I've been trying to keep up. I've been pretending I'm something I'm not. I'm sorry, George, it's not you. It's fashion.
George looks at him for a long moment. Then he stands up decidedly and walks away to the other side of the room. He turns and looks sadly back at Kirk.
Whoever the bitch is, I hope she knows how lucky she is.
As he goes, Kirk starts to say something, but stops. Outside, George walks away in a daze, while Kirk watches from the window. Another day, and George walks around a street corner.
Yeah, well, at least my mother knows how to make Yorkshire pudding, you swiffle dick, rugby whore! I never want to see you again!
He takes in a breath as he watches the blonde in the leopard print skin coat throw a shoe at the departing car. Then George walks over to him. It's Marilyn.
Come on, Cinders.
George puts an arm around him, kisses his head, and leads him away. The black high heel shoe forgotten in the road. Steve's holding court in Blitz.
I said no, David. The travel was first class. The beach, the most beautiful beach I'd ever been to. But then massive Ferguson's tractor.
10 seconds in a bowie video, and he thinks he's Liz Taylor.
He thought they'd be filming in Barbados. They ended up in Southend.
Yeah, should let me drive that bulldozer down the beach. Would have flattened the bastard.
At least he's doing something with his life. What have you freaks achieved?
You know this means, don't you?
What?
If Steve Strange can get on television, anyone can.
Marilyn's reading lyrics in the toilets with George.
Half of it doesn't even rhyme.
It poetry doesn't have to rhyme.
I thought these were song lyrics.
Oh, that's what poetry is, you spaz.
Well, you should learn an instrument.
Guitars look butch, drums make you sweat, and no one even notices the keyboard player. No. I'm a solo artist.
Steve's sitting in a throne-like chair in the club, wearing a black uniform jacket and black peaked cap. Holding a cigarette in one hand, he stares steadily out at the dancing crowd as Rusty approaches a shaven-headed woman and whispers in her ear. She goes over to see Steve, who speaks to her and drops a necklace into her open hand, then sends her away with a flick of his fingers. Later, everyone's gone and Steve's cashing up.
All right, George. Steve and me wanted a quick word. Here he is. Right, I'm off. I'll see you next Tuesday.
Sit down, Rusty.
I don't want to be involved in all this.
Well, you are involved, so sit.
God, who died?
Empty your pockets, George.
Why?
Because we're your employers and we're telling you to.
You're making a big mistake.
He pulls his pocket linings out.
All right. The bag.
Happy now? We owe you an apology.
Yeah, too fucking right you do. I mean, you wouldn't try this shit if I was a nooker.
What's nooker?
National Union of Cloakroom Attendants. I'm starting it tomorrow.
George.
What now?
Steve stands up and holds out his hand, gazing steadily at George, who reluctantly puts his bag down on a table and goes back to shake it.
I'd just like to say that I'm really, really sorry.
Yeah, and so you should be.
Really sorry.
He pulls off the necklace that George is wearing.
That I have to fire you.
You can't fire me, I quit.
You can't quit after you're fired.
No, I quit. I was just seeing out the end of my shift.
Well, you didn't mention it to me or Rusty, so it doesn't count.
Yeah, it counts. Me and Martin are talking about starting a band.
Martin fucking Degville. If that man ever records a note of music, I'll burn my record player.
Yeah, I'll quit.
No, you're fired!
Quit!
Can we just agree that you no longer work here?
Fired.
Quit.
Fired!
Quit!
He walks out.
It's fine.
George gets back to the squat and sees a girl with a mop of black hair sitting at the top of the bare wooden stairs, her head leaning against the wall. Further up, a young man in a red checked shirt is standing with his back to the wall, looking distraught. Guessing that something's wrong, George runs up and finds paramedics wrapping Dawn up in a blanket, then covering her face with it. He walks softly through her room, the wooden floors littered with drug paraphernalia, cigarette papers, tobacco, burnt tin foil, candles and melted wax, packets of white powder. On the wall are happy, colourful photographs of the gang together. George pulls one down of him and Dawn. He looks at it, then sadly raises his eyes. Later, George crosses the landing with a suitcase in one hand and the mannequin under his arm.
Bye.
The two people watch from a doorway as he heads over to the stairs and carries his things down them, looking back sadly as he goes. ...1986. George is in his room, smoking, looking pale and waxy, and pacing in agitation. He rifles through some tabloids, then scrapes up the last of his drugs and dabs it. In need of more, he gets his keys and is about to head out when he stops, struck with an idea. Next, George is writhing along the floor on his back with a mannequin on top of him, into a darkened room. He stands it up in front of the window and hangs his jacket on it, adds his sunglasses and cap, then walks out and turns on the light. In the street, the waiting press see its silhouette.
He's up there!
While they're distracted by it, George climbs over the back wall, just as an old woman's approaching with her dog.
Nice night for it.
Wearing his hat low, he walks down the road behind the photographers, gets into his car, and drives away unnoticed. George's thin, pale face seems ridden with sadness as he drives down through the city. He turns to stare as he passes the dark and abandoned Blitz nightclub. A lone person sits on the pavement outside it.
Who is it?
It's George!
Whoa!
I never said you could come in.
Yeah, don't play silly buggers with me. Where's the drugs?
Steve, now with shorter, messy hair, watches without expression as George snorts a line.
Right.
Kings Road, 1981. George walks into a barber shop where a man has just had his frizzy red hair cut.
Don't know what I want.
You're Malcolm McLaren.
So much for the new look. What are you?
I'm a singer.
Come on, Sam.
No, leave him. He's a singer. We should let him sing.
The barber turns Malcolm's chair round.
In your own time.
What do you want to hear?
Whatever pops into your deluded little head.
He looks over at two older men in suits who have lowered their magazines to watch.
All things bright and beautiful, all creatures great and small, all things wise and wonderful.
You plucked up all that courage, came all this way just to sing a Sunday school hymn.
It was in my head.
Do you hear that? That is the sound of no one applauding. Get used to it.
I want to be famous.
Famous for what?
Well, 35 years, you just about do it.
Since you forced me to look for positives, you do have an interesting exterior.
You should see me when I make an effort.
Malcolm turns to him and smiles. George approaches a huge red brick house. He's wearing a black tunic over a floral red coat, a black hat, and coloured ribbons tied into his dark hair. Clutching a scrapbook, he opens the heavy wooden door and walks into a grand entrance hall.
Up here. Take your shoes off.
Malcolm, peering at him from over the banisters, moves away, and George quickly takes his shoes off and hurries upstairs in his white socks.
No, down here. For God's sake, put your shoes on.
They look through press cuttings and photos from the Blitz Nights.
How wonderful. Notorious for doing nothing.
Only now I think it's time I actually did something.
Well, why fuck with the winning formula? You tell me your name already.
Three times, Mr. McLaren, it's George.
How horribly forgettable. You should change it.
To what?
I've just written a song about a pilot called Lieutenant Lush.
Well, do I get to record this song as it's named after me?
No, it's for a little band I put together called Bow Wow Wow Wow.
I thought there was only two wows.
I'm thinking of extending it.
That's a brilliant idea.
Don't kiss my arse, George.
Please, call me Lush.
I have little interest in the music industry. I sell clothes. In order to sell anything, you have to advertise it. That's why I put the Pistols together. If I were to form a real band, that would take a great deal of time and effort, neither of which I have. So when I look at you, what do you think I ask myself?
How do I spell his name? On a check?
Can you wear what I tell you to wear and convince others to copy you?
I'm your mannequin, Mr. McLaren.
A brick comes through the window.
I'm having a new house delivered. They're sending it one bit at a time.
Malcolm walks around the large wooden desk, picks up the brick and adds it to some others. George and Annabella Lynn, the singer from Bow Wow Wow, sports a thick black gelled mohican with the sides of her head shaved. They pose in various different styles together against a white backdrop. The original four members of the band pose together, then George on his own, then George is with them. Sometimes he's at the back, sometimes at the front, but always trying to hog the limelight. George and Annabella are on posters advertising the band's new single. George walks into Malcolm's house as the other band members are coming down the stairs. They all file past him without even looking at him and go out the front door.
Did I miss the band meeting?
Well, they came early.
Well, they didn't mention it.
Look, there's no easy way to say this. They don't like you.
Oh.
They want you out.
Well, you told them where to go.
Of course I did. Which is why they are off on tour without you.
Malcolm shows George out of the house.
Enjoy the rest of your life.
This shit anyway. Adam and Jens, we're bongos. Do you know who you want to be?
Who do I want to be?
Shaking Stevens.
Trust me, I don't want to be Shaking Stevens.
Oh, I'd give anything to be Shaky. Kids love him. Grannies love him. He's number one every pissing Tuesday. No team bothering to copy it.
Well, I don't think there's enough room for two people to dance on Elvis's grave. Anyway, fuck music. I'm going to be an actor.
You're Lieutenant Lush.
Lieutenant Lush.
That's what I said.
No, you said Lieutenant, as in Columbo. Anyway, I'm not him.
Lush is dead.
Yeah, life cut tragically short. But it means nothing to me.
Well, I'm in the music business too.
Yeah, I thought I saw you working in our price. What do you do?
Well,
he mimes playing bass.
I'm starting a band if you're interested.
I hope you got more instruments than that.
You're funny.
Oh, well, that's good enough for me, I'm in.
They shake hands, and George pulls him down onto the seat. George is sitting on his bed at home, painting his nails, a radio cassette player beside him.
And if any of you boys would like to know how to look good in makeup, check out Steve Strange in the video to this song. This is Fade to Grey.
George's expression becomes troubled and annoyed. He puts the top on the nail varnish and tries to turn the radio off, but uses the wrong dial and struggles with it. Later, at Steve's house, with drugs all over the tabletop.
They're selling pirate shirts in Topshop.
What?
I said, they're selling pirate shirts in fucking Topshop. I walk down the street. People don't even throw stuff at me anymore.
What does that mean?
We're dead. Officially, Naff. Doomed to walk the forgotten land with John Lydon and Les McFucking Kewen.
Oh.
Bay City Rollers.
God, they were huge.
You either made it onto the Live Aid bill, or you picked up your P-45.
I was busy that day.
Well, you still have a recording contract?
No, I quit the band. I was fired.
Go it alone. My grandmother couldn't pick the others out of a lineup.
Yeah, and what exactly does Granny Strange know about it?
Who do you think used to buy your records? Wasn't just fat teenage girls unable to get boyfriends. My granny fucking loved you. Oh, Stevie, why can't you be more like that boy, George? Well, because he's a lying, thieving, harrowing, snorting bender, I tell her. But she wouldn't hear a word of it. Just thought you were as pure as a driven snow.
How is John's doing, Alice?
You two still together?
I think he wishes I was dead.
Well, this could be his lucky night.
Daytime. John carries a box out of a XXX shop and puts it in a van, which George is sitting in the back of.
What are these? Pornos?
I don't watch them, I just deliver them.
I'm George, in case you forgot.
Everyone knows who you are.
Oh, flattering.
Kirk's fat Irish faggot. I'm just fucking with you.
John sits opposite him.
How's things?
I'm in a band. The Sex Gang Children.
You're not going to get much airplay with a name like that.
Well, we might be looking for a drummer.
Is that right?
Mm.
One, two, three, four.
A bare brick cellar. George waits nervously to sing.
Start again. 1, 2, 3, 4. Black boys in the outside. We kiss to divine. White hands, white hearts to cheer the power. Can I make you mine?
Here we go, grubs up. So, what sort of influences have you all got?
Punk.
Reggae.
Motown.
Soul.
Pop.
Throw in a bit of skiffle and you'll have the full house. Any ketchup, Mrs. C?
Mikey's mum brings him some.
Were you in the dad?
For a bit.
What's Captain Sensible like?
His feet smell.
So what do you think?
Honestly, I think Mikey's mum makes a mean fish finger sandwich.
No, I'm serious.
Oh, you're serious, are you?
No, we're going to be huge.
Not unless you replace your lead guitar.
Oh, yeah, you just found him.
There's more to this shit than wearing the right frock.
You think I can't sing?
Did I say that?
Well, you never said I could.
God, you're a needy bastard, aren't you?
More than you'll ever know.
A look passes between them. Then John lights his cigarette.
Your voice is okay. There's a bit of soul there. And when the words come out, I sort of believe you mean them.
That's a compliment, isn't it?
It's as much as you're going to get for now.
George leans against the van door, watching him affectionately.
So are we doing this or what?
He gives John his drumsticks and they get in the front. John enters the cellar.
Hello, John, lazy prick.
Don't panic, Mr. Mannering.
Let's get on with this, shall we?
Are you seriously going to sing this? The eyes of Medusa control and compel. To love I surrender, I'm under his spell. He loves me, he hates me, he knows me too well.
Okay, it's no shut up of your face.
It says he. He loves me, he hates me.
Medusa was a bird.
Yeah, snakey, yeah.
Yeah, definitely not a geezer.
Not my Medusa.
Yeah, well, it's three against one, so let's just rehearse it with she, shall we?
George glares at John, then rushes out. John follows him outside and finds him leaning against a wall, reading his lyrics.
Right, what have we got here? A Jew, a Jamaican, a hairdresser and a puff. Nothing can stop a lineup like that. But if you want to write songs that only appeal to half a dozen people, do it in your own time. I thought we were aiming a bit higher than that.
Yeah, well, we can't all pretend to be something we're not.
I'm not asking you to pretend anything. Just don't elaborate on certain stuff. Always leave them wanting more. Walt Disney said that. He did all right for himself, didn't he?
George nods tearfully. Later, at his house...
George! Are you in there? George!
He opens the door and sees John's cut face.
What happened to you?
The bitch went for me.
George lets him in. Then he's dressing the wound with antiseptic lotion. He dabs it gently with a ball of cotton wool.
She reckons I'll spend more time with you than I do with her.
I'll give her a triangle, stick her in the band, and then she can see you day and night.
She's jealous.
Of what?
Of you, you muppet.
George looks at him, alert.
She thinks I fancy you.
George's smirk becomes serious when he sees the depth of meaning in John's eyes. John takes his hand and leans forward to kiss him, but George backs off.
Don't make me look a prat.
Now they kiss.
You have no idea what you're doing.
They kiss again, passionately. In 1986, George is still driving through London's streets, the myriad of lights blazing around him. He looks emotional, broken, and hurt. Lights come on in an expensive white house, and John, in his dressing gown, runs downstairs. George gets out of the car, which he's crashed into a fountain on the drive.
But I guess he'll have to do!
George knocks him down, but John gets on top of him as his wife runs out.
I'm calling the police!
No, just go back inside!
He's a bloody headcase!
You let your brass talk to me like that,
Emily! Just go back inside! George, shut the fuck up!
You're crushing my ribs.
Good!
Now I'm going to vomit. No, seriously.
John lets him go, and George leans over the fountain. He lies down next to John again, both on their backs, looking up at the sky.
What's that? 26 all.
I've had you more than you've had me.
Flashback to drawn strips of negatives showing photos of George and John in different poses. Then the other two band members join them, along with the words, Culture Club, Kissing to be Clever. John's chatted up by a blonde after a gig. George, who was watching jealously, bursts out of the back doors, fighting him. George is asleep in bed, his bare leg sticking out under a cover that only reaches to his navel. With his eyes still closed, he turns his head and rests it against John's, who's sleeping next to him, his face bruised. John's house in 1986.
I'm going to prison, aren't I?
You're not going to prison.
I won't survive in a place like that.
No one's going to prison.
Don't you watch the news? I mean, Norman Tebbit wants to lock me up and throw away the key.
You shouldn't have fucking voted for them then, should you? What's his beef, anyway? You're a rock and roll stereotype. We've been exporting them for years.
What have I done that's so evil?
You got a little older. A little less cute. It's like Bowie.
Bowie?
You think he didn't go through this shit? He killed Ziggy, he didn't know where to go next. Then he puts out Station to Station and everyone thinks it's the end. But what happens after that? He finds his way to Berlin and records Low.
I love Low.
And that's where you are right now, somewhere between Station to Station and Low. It's a transition.
It hurts.
It's gonna hurt for a little while longer.
What am I gonna do, John?
Get yourself well. Then give them something else to talk about.
George rests against John, who puts an arm around him and kisses his head. Then they separate again.
I'll buy you some new fish.
Damn right you will.
Colourful spotlights flash. The top of the pop sign comes on, and a crowd of young Boy George lookalikes run to the studio. BBC TV Centre, 1982. A lit sign changes from rehearsal to transmission. In a corridor...
Oh, I think I've got diarrhoea.
If you shit yourself, just carry on.
He's going to do this or not?
Of course he's doing it.
Culture Club, last call.
Whatever it takes, get him out of that car.
The band are wearing white clothes, splashed with a red, yellow and black paint effect. John looks from Mickey to Roy, then he's outside, walking towards a parked car. He stops beside it, puts both hands on the tinted window and breathes on the glass. He stands back and draws a heart in the condensation, then walks away. In the car, George turns his head to look at it and smiles softly. Lights come on in the TV studio and the band stand ready on stage, minus George. Holding his sticks to his chin, John nods reassuringly at Mikey. George follows a runner along the corridor. He stops and sees Kirk sitting in a dressing room having his makeup done. Their eyes lock through the mirror, then Kirk looks away and back at his reflection, his own nerves apparent. George puts on his large aviator sunglasses and walks on. Kirk blinks away a tear. The rest of the band wait on stage, and George, wearing a white tunic with a red cross under a long black sleeveless coat, waits behind it. He walks on. John nods at George, who looks solemnly at the floor. Then he becomes confident. In 1986, George sits at a dressing table at home, wiping off his makeup. He walks slowly through the darkness and opens his front door to the waiting media. He stands for a moment looking out, then starts down the steps towards them and walks through the pack. In the TV studio,